Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavahitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 4. Uddhava Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29. O lotus-eyed Lord, generally those yogis who try to steady the mind experience frustration because of their inability to perfect the state of trance. Thus they weary in their attempt to bring the mind under control. Krishna Uddhava from 11:15. Learned experts in devotional service state that the mystic perfections of yoga that I have mentioned are actually impediments and are a waste of time for one who is practicing the supreme yoga, by which one achieves all perfection in life directly from me. Right? So the direct activities means devotional service because of its directness. It doesn't require the other forms of yoga in their external forms. Does that make sense? So the Ashtanga yoga system as it is, or the Karma yoga or Jnana yoga as it is, are unnecessary. Because what is actually useful from those processes are already included in bhakti. Right? Because bhakti is the original. Then when something is there, then you extend from there. Does that make sense? Like let us say, for example, you have a full meal. And then with that full meal, let's say we have some, like, fried potatoes. Now, in the Bengali cooking, then at the time when you're serving the rice and dal, those potatoes will go along with that. Right? So the rice mixed with the dal, then you eat those potatoes with there as a preparation. Right? So that works very nicely, and it fits into the meal very nicely. It has its place. You know, you've had your bitter, your spinach, and you'll eat these, then other, like, dry vegetables, then your wet vegetables, like this. Now, if you want to just focus only on those fried potatoes and remove them from the meal, now on their own, they're not so great. Right? Because before they were paired with the rice and dal. So now you have to put something else, some kind of chutney, some kind of sauce, something else you have to put along with that. Does that make sense? And so how you would serve before is you already have the main plate, things like that, it'll just go on the side, but now it has its own, it has to have its own arrangements. You know what I'm saying? And then you'll pick the drink, you'll pick this, you'll pick that, you'll pick so many things to go with it. Right? And it'll work. And you'll feel it's very complete. Right? As a snack. But it'll never be a meal. Right? Unless you're 8 years old. Right? But it's not a meal. Does that make sense? So, that's what happens with bhakti is the complete meal and everything that has its particular thing that's pleasing to Krishna. Then when we take one thing and want to emphasize it, separate from Krishna, other things are added on there to make it seem as though it's a complete thing. That's what happens in karma and jnana and yoga. Right? And so then for the devotee, they just drop all those extra things to go with the where it has in its main position. But we're worried those things aren't there. But what about the chutney? Yeah, it comes, but later in the meal. What about the drink? Yeah, it's there, you know. You understand? You know, do you get a plate? Of course, there's a meal. The meal goes on a plate. You understand? So like this, then we're worried that that if we don't have the snack, it won't exist. But in actuality, it's already part of a complete meal. It's not a problem. Does that make sense? So that's the whole difficulty, is that they try to perform these activities separate from Krishna. And because it's so difficult, then it becomes a waste of time. Right? And so at some point they'll switch from there to some other distraction. Right? Like that. Yeah.
Right. How does samadhi in Ashtanga yoga compare to samadhi in bhakti yoga?
Means your samadhi in Ashtanga yoga means that since you're using the physical platform as the medium, then you have to have all kinds of preliminary activities or preparatory activities or situations you have to create for it to work. Since you're creating samadhi based on the material facility. So, because the material facility specifically means the mind, because the mind is restless if there's any movement. Therefore, you have to stop any movement. So that means physically there's no movement. I mean, what you say means you have to stop the life airs from moving. To stop the life airs from moving, you can't be moving. So to be able to be not moving and be able to stop the life airs, then that takes so much practice and everything. So that's why then the whole asana and all these different things. It means to do asana, to focus, then you have to yama, niyama. Then from the asana, then you do the pranayama. Then when that's controlled, then you can stop then you can focus. Then you can start to meditate and then samadhi. So that mechanical process is necessary because one feels that by karma, then you get something. Then if they're fortunate, then they may take up the process of bhakti. Does that make sense? But you see, it's rare, but it does happen. Like in Gita, it mentions if someone goes through the Asanga Yoga system meditating on Super Soul, then surrenders to the Super Soul. Right? Then that person then will take up devotional service like the devotee who's been practicing sadhana from the beginning. So they'll end up at the same place. Just the one had to mechanically get to liberation, which is very difficult to take it up, while the other very easily takes it up from the beginning. So the samadhi of the devotees, then they don't have to stop the physical activities. They can be performing their activities and be completely absorbed in Krishna. So it's much nicer performed. And it's also, at all times, all places, all circumstances can be applied. While the other one, you have to have very specific situations to be able to apply it.
So, when you get into the meditation on Super Soul, you have two alternatives. One is you identify as being one with it, or if you have a bhakti yoga teacher, you can give you the knowledge that actually you're supposed to be a servant of the system. Then you can move on to bhakti yoga.
Yes. Yes, but the point is how many devotional yogis do you see? And even if they're using, because devotion is the only thing that'll make it work, because they have to meditate on the Super Soul and that. But that doesn't mean that they're devotees. They're only using devotion to gain what they want. And once they gain it, that devotion stops. Right? You know, because it's always respected. Devotion is respected. If someone's devoted to their knowledge or their craft or their service or, you know, their meditation, people appreciate that. It's seen as a good quality. But they're only seeing it as a subservient quality to the main. So it's not karma misra bhakti, it's bhakti misra karma. Does that make sense? So they only apply the bhakti until they get the results. Then they become proud and this and that. You know. So it's very rare. Very, very rare. So that's why it said that the first thing in devotional service is get yourself spiritual direction from bona fide devotees. That's the first thing. And in that, then you can cultivate all the other aspects. So it doesn't say, situate yourself in a place not too high, not too low, not too like this. It says first is connection with the spiritual master. Then from there you develop. But yes, so if you serve Krishna directly means through bhakti, means we're always serving through the parampara. But by that method, then all the it's easy, it's joyfully performed. All the results of all other endeavors, all other pieties are all included within that. Prabhupada gives the example of a 100-rupee note includes the 20, 50 rupees, includes the 20, includes the 10, the 5, it includes all that. You don't have to think as, well, I want to go out and buy something for 10 rupees. Will the 100 rupee do it? It automatically does that, and you'll have change left over. Yeah, is that what you're
saying? Yes. Why we have difficulty to accept that?
Why do we have? Because it means surrender. And surrender means giving up, I'm the controller, and enjoy it. That's where the problem comes from. Plus, we're just so used to know that if I make this arrangement, I'll get. You know, so it's there's always that kind of context. Like, let's say before you could watch others doing something, and that was considered a nice thing. But now it's kind of like, why would you do that when you can do it yourself, right? Because this idea you get more. So then instead of watching someone else do it, then you on whatever it is, virtual reality or something, now you do it. But the point is it's already included. If you have a good relationship with someone, you hear from them about them performing an activity, then it works very nicely. But when you have the aspect of thinking, no, unless I do it, I don't get any benefit, then that brings up all kinds of problems, because then there's no need of relationships. Means instead of it being, as we're saying, like devotion, and then you have these others as tools, you're using the devotion as a tool for the other things. So before, instead of having relationships with people and using things as a support of that, now you use people for your things. Right? So it doesn't give a very good result. So that's the problem, is the more we encourage that aspect, then the more it gets distant from the nature of the soul. And so therefore more dissatisfaction. Right? It's just like, let's say someone wrote a nice book before. It was good hundreds of years, thousands of years, people still read the, Iliad and Mahabharat, all these, they all read these things. But in the modern thing, people make stuff, and it's great, but then, if you come across it, it gets up, you're there and someone else mentions it to you, oh wow, I saw this thing, oh yeah, we already saw that. You don't even want to hear about it. Let alone, deal with it again and again. You know what I'm saying? So that was the thing, is that before it's like people had the Ramayana Maharaj, you can hear it again and again, it doesn't matter. Like that. Even in the Western, they had the classics. There's 100 books in the classics. And those would be, you start at the beginning, go to the end, and start at the beginning again. So it's just you keep going through. So these kind of things they had more meaning, and because the secondary were more supportive of it. Right? And so there was a concept that there's a primary, something higher. The relationship, the feelings, all these kind of things. And then the externals then were secondary to that. But if we take the principle of the secondary to more extreme, then it's the secondary of the secondary. So it's just about the items you have. And whatever you get, even you work really hard and you get that car that you wanted, and then you're happy with it. After 6 months when they come out with a new car, someone else drives up next to you in the new car. And it looks better. And they have a bigger smile on their face. And you feel bad. So that's how it's designed, the material world. You want to overemphasize the secondary and take it out of context, you will suffer more. And if you see it in its proper context, then it will work very nicely. But, yeah. Sri Krishna Uddhava, Srimad Bhagavatam 11:24-14. By mystic yoga, great austerities, and the renounced order of life, pure destinations of Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka are attained. But by devotional service, one achieves my transcendental abode. And so by these other systems, you can get up to the higher planets, beyond the higher planets, to the Satyaloka system. The bhakti will take you beyond that to the spiritual world. Right? So this is, so we're analyzing what's the benefit of bhakti. Right? Mm-hmm. Sanat Kumar Kumaraj Pritu, Srimad Bhagavatam 4, chapter 22. The devotees who are always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord can very easily overcome hard knotted desires for fruitive activities. Because this is very difficult, the non-devotees, the jnanis and yogis, although trying to stop the waves of sense gratification, cannot do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. Kapila Dev to Devahuti, in Srimad Bhagavatam 3, chapter 23. Anyone whose work is not meant to elevate him to religious life, anyone whose religious ritualistic performances do not raise him to renunciation. And anyone situated in renunciation does not lead him devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be considered as dead, although breathing. So in other words, you have to be trying to get yourself situated in religious life. But that religious life, its only purpose is to come to renunciation, right? Because the religious life means you take the sense gratification or the attachments you have and regulate them, right? That's religious life. Religious life simply means regulation of attachments. So that regulates both who is involved in these activities and to what degree they're involved. Right? And by that, that should bring you to renunciation, because when you regulate it, it becomes less interesting. It doesn't mean you can't work with it expertly, it just becomes the phantasmagoria aspect of it goes away. Does that make sense? Because when it's ever, I'm interested, and then you can make the endeavor, then one will always be under that illusion that it can make you happy, even though it's not. But if you regulate the life that at this particular time you do something, then you start to look at it. Right? If you eat any time you want, then you always think that eating will do something, make you happy. But if you eat at regulated times, then you can understand it's not the food that makes you happy. Right? Does that make sense? There's something beyond that. Because we're not the body, we're not all these different things. So then, that will create renunciation. So then, not that you'll not stop eating, but you won't eat more than you require. You won't eat things that you don't require. Does that make sense? So eating 2 kilos of ice cream at 11 o'clock at night, you may not require. We're not even bringing up about the chocolate sauce or something like that. What, 1 kilo? That's my point. Yeah, see, that's regulation. That's dharma, right? Yeah. That's the whole point.
Right? It's like a diet now. It's regulation.
Yes, it means it's a diet for everything. It's how you dress, how you behave, how you deal with it. Because we would do whatever we want, whenever we want, however we want. But that's called a child. It's a baby. They do that. Adult means that you regulate it. So the whole point is that it should be based on religion. Means, okay, that we have adjusted our life, our life by mundane speculative, like modern moralistic things, still that's going to regulate to some degree. But if that doesn't result in you taking up religion, so that's what it says. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't bring you to religion. Anyone whose work is not meant to elevate himself to religious life. So therefore, on the platform of the senses and the social position. So economics, morality, justice. If these aren't meant to bring you to religious life, then they're a waste of time. Because they haven't satisfied anybody. Right? Like that. So you move forward. So it has to move forward into there. That has to go into renunciation. But that renunciation, where you give up the attachment to the material world, that's useless if you don't take up devotion to Krishna. So in other words, if you take up devotion to Krishna, that focus on Krishna will naturally create renunciation because you've regulated your lifestyle. Pancharatric system regulates your lifestyle. But instead of being a material piety, it's a spiritual piety. Is that something like that? And then all those things below it, the senses, the social, the economic, they're all taken care of by that process. Sages to Sutta Goswami from Srimad Bhagavatam 1, chapter 18. We have just begun to the performance of this fruit of activity, a sacrificial fire, without certainty of its result due to many imperfections in our action. Our bodies have become black from the smoke, but we are factually pleased by the nectar of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, Govinda, which you are describing. Right? So these fruitive activities, they're not going to give a result that you can depend upon, but that taking shelter of Krishna, that gives a very nice result. Sukadev Goswami Maharaj Prakrit, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.11. One who desires to be absorbed in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti effulgence should worship the master of the Vedas, Lord Brahma or Brihaspati, the learned priest. One who desires powerful sex should worship the heavenly king Indra. And one who desires good progeny should worship the great progenitors called Prajapati. One who desires good fortune should worship Durga Devi, the superintendent of the material world. One desiring to be very powerful should worship fire. And one who aspires only after money should worship the Vasus. One should worship the Rudra incarnations of Lord Shiva if he wants to be a great hero. One who wants a large stock of grain should worship Aditi. One who desires to attain the heavenly planet should worship the sons of Aditi. One who desires a worldly kingdom should worship Vishvadeva. And one who wants to be popular with general mass of population should worship the Sadhya demigod. One who desires a long span of life should worship the demigods known as the Ashwini Kumaras. And a person desiring a strongly built body should worship the earth. One who desires stability in his post should worship the horizon and the earth combined. One who desires to be beautiful should worship the beautiful residents of the Gandharva Loka. And one who desires a good wife should worship the Apsaras and the Urvasi society girls of the heavenly kingdom. One who desires domination over others should worship Lord Brahma, the head of the universe. One who desires tangible fame should worship the personality of Godhead. And one who desires a good bank balance should worship the demigod Varuna. One desires to be greatly learned man should worship Lord Shiva. And one who desires a good marital relation should worship the chaste goddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. One should worship Lord Vishnu as devotee for spiritual advancement in knowledge. And for protection of heredity and advancement of a dynasty, one should worship the various demigods. One who desires domination over a kingdom or an empire should worship the Manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. And one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A person who has broader intelligence, whether it be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. All the different kinds of worshippers of multi-demigods can attain the highest perfectional benediction, which is spontaneous attraction, unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by the association of the pure devotees of the Lord. Right? So that's the actual benefit. The full benefit is gained in these things, is that whatever we're looking for means you have two aspects. You have, by performing devotional service, then all the material benefits that are there already included. But why are we involved or interested in those material benefits? Right? Because there's a particular experience we're looking for. That experience is already attained, included within bhakti. Therefore, by worshiping the Lord, then in devotional service, then all other things are obtained. Right? Either directly or indirectly. Because we can say directly, I want the thing, but you only want the thing because of the effect it can give. Right? Like you notice that some of the points, they were mentioned twice. But you notice there's a different mood. Right? One is if it's just money. Because people are so on money, it's just about money. They don't think of anything else. So that's one group of demigods. But then what was the other one? If he wants a good bank balance, then that's Varuna. Right? So he's the lord of the ocean. Ocean deals with the waters. Waters deals with, how you say, taste. So somebody wants a good bank balance. Is it just money? No, it's the whole thing, is that you're there, your people, and you got the good money, and it's all happening. And because the other is just about getting money. The other is about having money. You have a good bank balance, so you can spend money, you can do things. You understand? So what are you looking at? You're looking at mentalities. We think it's the thing itself, but there's a mentality behind it. Right? So that's the whole point, is that therefore if you have bhakti, all the other mentalities are all satisfied, because all those are the Supreme Lord anyway. The potency of all these demigods is Krishna. Therefore, the taste you're getting from any of those is also Krishna. But we mistakenly think it's the external form. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So it all goes back to Krishna. So therefore, if you have Krishna, all other tastes are already included. And especially if that taste is in worshipping Govinda. Right? Means if you're worshipping Krishna, he's the all-attractive. Why are you attracted? Because of the particular benefit you'll get. So if Krishna is the all-attractive, then by worshipping him, all attractions are satisfied in his worship. Is that... Because yeah. That faith, that's dynamic. Sri Krishna Uddhava, Srimad Bhagavatam 11, chapter 14. My dear Uddhava, the unalloyed devotional service rendered to me by my devotees brings me under their control. I cannot be thus controlled by those engaged in mystic yoga, Shankya philosophy, pious work, Vedic study, austerity, or renunciation. Right? Yeah. So, in other words, all the things that you think can control everything and get all benefit, that can't control Krishna. Only this, pure bhakti, unalloyed devotion. Sukadeva Goswami de Maharaj Prickett, 12, chapter 3. By one's engaging in the process of demigod worship, austerities, breath control, compassion, bathing in holy places, strict vows, charity, and chanting of various mantras, one's mind cannot attain the same absolute purification as that achieved when the unlimited personality of Godhead appears within one's heart. Therefore, O King, endeavor with all your might to fix the Supreme Lord Keshava within your heart. Maintain this concentration upon the Lord, and at the time of death, you will certainly attain the supreme destination. Right? So that endeavor to always remember Krishna and not forget, that gives the perfection. Right? Brahma to Sri Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 14. Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge, and with their body, words, and mind offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees. Certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. Right, so here's, while remaining situated in their established social positions. Right? So the point is to be absorbed in the Lord. So we've already, you know, we understand that those who have given up all these social things, being absorbed in the Lord, but it says here, even while remaining situated in their established social positions.
Mm-hmm.
So that means, what would that mean? Because we're not specifically meaning here brahmacharis, vanapras, sannyas.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really consider those much of social positions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, they're within varnashram, so they are social positions. So one goes beyond that, one's servant of Krishna. But when we say social positions here, you know, while remaining, that as grihastha, as having an occupation,
mm-hmm.
right, with these considerations, then they, if they just dedicate whatever they're doing to do it in connection with Krishna, remembering Krishna, then they attain all, they have conquered the Lord, who is unconquerable. So, my dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. So that's the point is that if you give up devotional service because it appears that the speculative process, or the, you know, this academic process is a greater thing, more special, it won't get you anything. Just the hard work you put into it, that's all you'll get.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the point. It will gain nothing for the soul. Right? It appears that so much can be done, but in actuality, what does one gain? So one can't give up the devotional process for that. That makes sense. So let alone if you can't give it up for this, then why would you be able to give it up for karma? Right? Does that make sense? So if you already reject jnana yoga, that means karma yoga has already been rejected. Yes.
We don't see often devotees reject devotion for jnana or for karma, but we see they trying to match and it's not working very well. So is that a good thing to follow?
Well, as long as is their purpose in matching it is trying to come to that point of renunciation, because whatever they're using there, these are all paths of religion. So renunciation is also religion. Studying the scriptures is religion. All these things, but religion has to give up renunciation. It means you're giving up the desire for that material benefit.
Yeah.
So as long as that's what's happening, that's all right. But if they give it up because they think that the Vedic knowledge is not actually that academic, or it doesn't give that taste that they're looking for, and they take up the modern processes, then they'll be lost. So that they won't get anywhere, because it's, you only get somewhere if you're using it as part of the process. But if you make that the process, then it won't be clear. Because also, if you go from devotion into speculative knowledge, then devotion being the main, if you take and speculative knowledge being its support, if you reverse that and take speculative knowledge as the main and devotion as the support, there's a good chance that you will reject devotion in pursuance of the speculative knowledge. Does that make sense? You know, it's like the example I give of the girls in the West, depending on the situation, so many times they tie their hair. Much of the time they leave it loose, but so many times they tie their hair. But when you have somebody from an Indian background who wants to fit into the Western, you know, environment, under no circumstance will they ever tie their hair. So the same way is if somebody gives up devotional service and takes up speculative knowledge, they won't support that speculative knowledge with bhakti. And so the only thing they gain is trouble. Like that. How you say? I want to put a little spin on it. They will just attain a vast amount of trouble. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. They have to be very, very careful. Because if one by nature, that aspect of jnana yoga is part of the thing, then that's fine. But jnana yoga means it's based in renunciation. If you're not basing it in renunciation, it's just speculation. So where's the yoga? Because then the activities aren't connected and the knowledge isn't connected. It's just you're playing with knowledge. Just like, you know, the karmis play with the material energy, with money and facilities. And you know, so what's the difference? But because it's knowledge, knowledge is in a higher position, it will be considered that you're superior. But who's made that hierarchy? It's still Krishna. He's said that knowledge is higher than influences, is higher than money. Right? And then at the bottom you have the knowledge and skills. You know, just your tactical skills, arts and sciences, like that. So, even the hierarchy of the position of the intellectual is established by Krishna. So you can't get away from that. So it's very unfortunate if one goes that direction. So one wants to be very, very careful to avoid dealing improperly, right? So offenses then can create this problem. It can dry up the creeper. So one is very careful about that. Sense gratification is going to put a stop, but it won't dry it up. It just means it won't progress. But if one's offensive, then it can actually dry up. So that's why it's said that somebody having sensual difficulty is a less of a problem than someone actually has philosophical problems. Yes. Like that. Because the philosophical can actually destroy the whole process. You know, put it back for, you know. Means if you get distracted by your senses, you'll take it up next life, continuing from where you left off. You know, the sense gratification will be there, and that opportunity to take up devotional service will be there again. But it's a waste of time. You could have gone back to Godhead. Right? But philosophical deviation can create, you know, as we see in one example, where 1 million lifetimes, they won't come in contact with bona fide devotees again. So you're dealing with something much more severe. Though by the modern moralistic position, because philosophy doesn't even count. Mm-hmm. It's not a social position. It's just the modern morality is it doesn't come in. So because it's all based on the morality, because that's based on the economics and all that, you can't have that system without that particular morality. It will look like the morality is the main thing. Does that make sense? So if someone is having sensual problems, just be based by habit and by the power of the senses, then, but seeing that that's not good and taking that humble position, they'll move forward. But someone who philosophically then has, based on that and improper philosophical understanding, has now based their sense gratification, then what's to stop them? What's to stop them? You know, what is there to limit what they're doing? Because it's based on the speculation. So how they speculate is how far they can take their process. You know what I'm saying? It gets very dangerous.
The difficulty seems to be is that when devotees deviate on sensual level, they try to back up the activity with the philosophy just to get rid of the guilty feelings. So that's like both.
Yes, but because the problem is the guilty feelings is that we're thinking we're the doer, but this is where we're in, how you say, what was the term was used before?
Agency.
An agent. Yeah. It means we're not the ultimate point. Is that under the modes? This is what happens. We allowed ourselves to function under the modes. That this is what happens. So it's technically not the soul. Yes, it was done with this body, mind, and senses, but it's not. So the soul then appreciates that if you don't have the right consciousness, the right activities, then the modes of nature will take you off into a tangent. But the point is we're not the doer there. So this modern idea of where you have to have this mode of ignorance manifestation of feeling bad, you know, because I did this and I did that and I'm so terrible, on the platform of mode of ignorance rather than in the mode of goodness where it's in real knowledge.
Yeah.
Then to avoid that, then like you said, then they'll rationalize the whole thing so they don't feel, but the point is it should be neither. You're not rational. A Brahmin doesn't berate himself for past mistakes. He learns from them and then moves on. Because if you use the mode of ignorance means nothing's done. Mode of passion, at least you do something, though the motive is wrong. Mode of goodness, you're doing the activity with the right motive. Right? But we're interested in pure goodness, so it'll be the closest to goodness. So we have to find what matches devotion is this. How you say? Mode of goodness as a material tool. But if you're used to passion and ignorance, then yes, you give a little passion and then the ignorance seems so glorious.
Yes.
You know? And, you know, you have all the passion, but there has to be a little bit of goodness. I mean, a little bit of ignorance, otherwise you'll move forward to goodness, and where's the fun in that? You know? Does that make sense? So they nourish each other. That's the difficulty. What it says is that if your actions aren't moving forward to religiosity, and it says religiosity is established by Scripture, not by ourselves. You know what I'm saying? So means that someone is quoting from Scripture some moralistic aspect from Scripture, then that's a nice thing. But it should be consistent that that's what they do on all their aspects of their life. Not that they only choose that because it supports their already, you know, material concept of morality. And if it comes to something in their morality, if it's opposed to Scripture, then they oppose Scripture. But only when it suits them, then they use Scripture. Then that kind of argument, even though technically it's correct, won't have the potency. It doesn't have the desired results because the intent is not devotion. Right? The intent is passion and ignorance, so it won't give a good result. So one has to be very careful about those things. That's why it says you should take it in what's here. And then if one doesn't do nicely, then you move forward. That's the point. It's just not bodily. Anybody can work on the higher platforms. But if you work on the bodily platform, then we can establish it on these external things. I'm better than you because of this. You know, my position, my money, my knowledge, my birth, you know, all these different things. Well, if we work it on goodness, then it has nothing to do with any of those things. It's not what you have and it's not your background or anything like that. It's what you're doing with what you have now. And so then that also becomes a problem, especially if you're not doing anything. Right? You know, of any value. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Going back to that point where you're saying that the devotion creeper may dry up.
Right.
If one commits offenses, and then you are correlating that with the improper philosophical understanding.
Yes.
Are those the offenses to the holy names when we think that, you know, the demigods are on an equal level and things like that? Is that what you're thinking of?
I would say more of equating that devotional service is a pious activity. Any of those. It can be. It's just a matter of whether you're looking at the philosophical aspect or the karma aspect. Since the verses was talking about that speculation, we're taking that angle. You can also destroy the creeper by karma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But in principle, any philosophical deviation is an offense to the holy name, in a sense.
Basically.
Yeah.
Because, see, is that someone has a sensual deviation, then it's just the senses were engaged in impious activity. So then, how to correct that? You just have to correct that you don't do that and you do whatever's they recommended. Right? Because giving up the sinful but not doing the proper, then you've gone from vikarma to akarma. Then that's also mode of ignorance because you're not doing anything. So what are you supposed to do? Right? In other words, you did nothing wrong, but you didn't do anything right. So you should do what's right. It should lead to religion. Right? So you're going from vikarma to akarma to karma. Right? But it has to lead from there to renunciation, because from karma then should come knowledge and detachment. Right? So you should be comfortable with that progression. That has to be that you surrender to the Lord. So you're trying to make that movement. So one has to be very careful. What we're discussing here is making up philosophies to support deviations. But before, someone did something wrong, they just said they did something wrong. And everybody knows it happens. And so now they're going to engage in devotional service, you move forward. You know what I'm saying? So, you see, someone's in the temple, they disappear from the temple, then one day they come back to the temple. Then I would generally see they would always mention what went wrong. Not details, but just, you know, what was your main categories. Like that. And so then that'll got up and like that. And then, you know, then it just goes on. They just fit right back where they were, the same services, the same, you know, spot, you know, where they used to sleep in the temple. You know, everything goes on the same. Right? So that's because, you know, devotional service is the main thing and you get distracted by Maya. Right? Then we see sometimes later that someone was there, did so many things, then they went away. Right? And like that. And then when they come back, then they say, no, you can't come back because you did all these things. Right? So, what does that have to do with Krishna consciousness? Right? And then we take that a step further, then it's why, without all these good, you know, good qualities, nice qualities, community development, all these things, then you can't have devotional service. Devotional service is completely independent. You have these, it's like an ornament. Does that make sense? You know, but you if you don't have, then what's the meaning? It's just like, let's say you have a cake, right? You can decorate the cake. It's a decorated cake. It's an ornament. But what if you have the decorations and no cake? You understand? So that's the whole point. We just take it further and further. And how do we do that? With philosophical misunderstandings. So we're not understanding what is the nature of the soul. We can't tell the difference between matter and spirit. That's the first verse of Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Real truth is knowing the difference between matter and spirit. And if you can't tell that difference, it's not truth. It may be on the external platform a fact, but it's not truth. But if I say facts, facts, okay, they're important, you know, it has that scientific aspect, but it doesn't carry as much weight as if I say truth. But it's only truth if it's connected to Krishna. So I want to say, because it's a fact, automatically it's truth. Truth means you can tell the difference between what's eternal and what's temporary. Right? So therefore, all these mundane situations, they're temporary. So what within that is the spiritual? What's the eternal? That part you have to take. Taking that, then you get the spiritual benefit. But if we take the temporary and say that that's devotion, you know, it's just like, let's say in a company, the employee of the month, what's going to be the main point? Their devotion to their work. You know, and if you talk about, yes, he's so devoted, or yes, he's so devoted to the idea of the company, and he worked hard, and even though he had so many failures, but now after 20 years, now it's a big, you know, multinational corporation and all that, you know, because of his devotion, or, you know, how you say, Joan of Arc, devoted to her country, like that. Somehow or another, I guess the Brits didn't appreciate the devotion.
Or something. But he still remembered.
Yeah, but he still remembered. Yeah. Like that. Well, the Brits, who remembers that, right? So, you understand? So the whole point is it has a glory, but we're using it to try to bring up something that is not there. But you have someone like Arjuna, who is a devotee, and then on top of that he's a great warrior. It's an ornament on his devotion. You understand? But the other way, if you use it, the devotion doesn't, it'll be on the material platform, an ornament, but it doesn't mean it's bhakti. Because the point is, they say, oh, but it's devotion. It says, yes, but no karma jnana works without bhakti. It's just what's your intent of that bhakti. You know what I'm saying? There are people worship the Supreme Lord. There's a problem. They go to the place of worship, you know, on a regular basis. But once that problem goes away, are they going on a regular basis? Mm-hmm. Only if there's a sense of gratitude. Now it'll turn into devotion. Before it was devotion, but for a particular goal. Once they get that goal, then you'll see they won't go on a regular basis. But someone who then has that appreciation of the Lord did this and arranged, and then they continue to do that, that you can call now, because it's now based on gratitude, now you can call that vaidhi. But before, they followed the rules, they followed the sadhana, but it was only to get what they wanted, then they stopped the sadhana. The other one then is continued. So you have to be able to tell the difference. So that's then, you know, and so then these problems on difference between matter and spirit are, what's the material energy, what's the Lord's potencies, what's the jiva, what are the potencies, who's the Lord, what are his potencies, what's the relationship between that, how do we deal with his energies. So that's where all the problems can come up. And so then people make up their own philosophy that sound logical. That's why they sound so good. Whoa, yeah, that sounds logical. But logical doesn't necessarily mean it's proper. Right, just like it's logical. Get a good education, get a good job, make lots of money, then you'll be happy. Sounds logical, right? You can see the progression. Does it work? No, so then it's not. But it sounds logical. So, yeah. Yes?
Bhagavad Krishna tells that the sadhu who has taken 4 rakshas, if he's practicing devotional service, he's still considered sadhu.
Yes, he's still considered sadhu because he understands it's not correct and he feels bad that he's, you know, displeased Krishna. But he's still situated in devotional service and still moving forward in devotion. He doesn't stop. You know, like those who do something wrong and then they give up their chanting and this and that and don't go and tell, don't do anything. You know, because, oh, I'm unqualified. Then what are they doing? How are they situated nicely? So that's why he says he's situated nicely. He's still in devotion, though he's done something wrong.
And the person whose knowledge is stolen by illusion is considered as impious.
Yes. 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 But you also have the Muda, who's, you know, his lifestyle is breaking the four-legged principles. You know. But the point, yes, but it's a good point, is that the jnani is considered in, even though he may be nicely situated. We're not saying that they're not good. You know? It means that you're your Naradama, in modern terminology, would be your professional. Like that. He's situated, he's good at it. He's making, means his salary starts with, you know, 100, you know, digits. I mean, not 100 digits, what do you call it? 6 digits. That's where it starts. But that's where the Mayaya Pratijnanas are. Because they're so proud and they're so together, they don't care about Krishna. Right? Then the Mayaya Pratijnana, he's so good, he doesn't care. The Asura, he's so influential, he doesn't care. The Muda is so, you know, absorbed in what he does, he doesn't care. So all these will distract. Yes. But the other is, the thing is that problems will come up and it will be there. So it's not that breaking of the principles and that is, you know, has a devotional use. It's just that one moves forward from that point. Mm-hmm. Like that. Yes.
How to understand that bhakti being the body superior to everything, and some devotee who is doing to devotional service and making other devotees still carry some low tendency to the vikas?
Are potatoes good? Right? something edible. Now they're sitting out in the field, under the ground. Right? So is there a process? So even you dig them out of the ground, they still have dirt all over them. Right? And even you wash them, they're still a peel. And still, even though you peel them, they're still kind of hard. So they have to be boiled. Right? So when they're boiled, that's called siddha. Right? So why complain that this potato has some mud on it? How can it be a potato and have mud on it? See, because here, what we're looking at is we're looking at it that bhakti is dependent upon karma. Because we're saying that if they have these qualities, how can they be devotees if they have some bad qualities? Because bhakti means no bad qualities, so they can't have any. So we're saying bhakti can't manifest. But why can't bhakti manifest? We're not saying it's pure devotion. That's why we distinguish the pure devotion, but we can't say that they're not devotees.
Because they are good devotees, because they make other devotees and really surrender.
Right.
Still, there is...
No, but what's the problem here?
They are. Well, because of this, bad quality, they cannot stay in the temple and it cannot be like...
Yes. But the whole point is, does it affect their devotion?
Relationships.
Yeah, but the relationships are based on what? Like, let's say if we're talking relationships and we're using varnashram. Okay, then they're in a senior position. How do you deal with the senior? Yeah, so are they being dealt with respect? In general? In general they are. And still they're not able to live in the temple. You have to keep your examples. Your answers should be consistent. In other words, don't throw something out just to give some taste. You know what I'm saying? You have to use the thing to show that, okay, they're not staying in the temple, that means because people see it in that way, therefore they're not dealing from that. So they're not working from the varnashram point of view. They're working from the modern point of view. Modern point of view is the, you know, how you say, it's the all or nothing. It's either they're a pure devotee or they're just a total absolute rat bag. There's nothing in between. Because if I'm going to offer any respect, the guy's got to be perfect, because I'm perfect and I'm so special that I will only surrender and deal with someone very nicely if they're perfect. Because if there's any, if I can find any imperfection, then I'm they're wasting my time, because my time is so valuable, because I'm the center of the universe. Right? So that's slightly different from the Vedic. You understand? Now, the point in the Vedic is that they've done something wrong. Now, if they can correct that, they go on exactly where they were. And they're doing something wrong, they can't correct it, then they readjust their life to match that. Does that make sense? You know, they're living in the temple, something's gone wrong, they can correct that, they continue living in the temple and doing their service. They've gone something wrong, they want to adjust, they like their new position like that, so therefore then the temple can't take care of them. They have to take up something new. But the position of senior, like I think it was Madhudvisa, like that, he was a sannyasi, then somehow or another got involved with this girl, so he asked him, Prabhupada personally asked him, says, you want to be involved with this girl, get married and go on doing your service, his preaching service, nothing would change, just now he'd do it as a grihastha. Or you see that, no, that was just a mistake, the mind, the senses get carried away, and so therefore that's not how I want to situate myself. I would rather continue as a sannyasi, so I'll continue on as a sannyasi. So both of those options are there. The point is why don't we take the principle is here, why do we have to get into the detail? So you understand, you have to take it that we're discussing a principle here. The point is, okay, you want to take the boy. Does he want to continue being involved with this boy? Does he want to marry this boy? Then he can't do that and live in the temple. Use your brain. Right? You understand? Varnashram, that's not cool. They want to do it, live outside. What do we care? You know what I'm saying? What somebody does in their spare time, what do we care? It's what they do on our time that matters. But now if he sees, okay, that's stupid, and they want to continue on in their position as they were, you know, as a brahmachari or whatever it is, then they continue on as a brahmachari. What does it matter what they were? I mean, if we go into it in detail, you know, there's a good chance most everybody's, well, not everybody, but here, then, start about here. The four regulative principles, not following them was a standard part of the life.
That was the life.
And so, just for reference, meat eating, it affects you your whole life, even if you give it up. It'll affect your children's whole life, your grandchildren in their life, they can get rid of it, the effect. The reaction to meat eating will only be gotten rid of by your grandchildren. So we shouldn't sit around and do the mighty, holier than thou kind of things that he did this, he did that. Yes, yeah, so what? Yeah, it was okay, a guy with a guy. What about girls with girls? Is that okay? Now that goes by, nobody says anything. The women are off with the women and whatever it is and like that, and they come to the temple, it's cool. Yeah, here with my partner, and okay. Yeah. But if the guy comes with his partner, I don't know. No?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's just that's the whole thing, is that we're making our own judgments. But as one person pointed out, he says, if you're celibate, what does it matter what your background is? Do you understand? So, therefore, then as a grihasta, or as a married person, or as a person with a partner, however you want to put it, you know, whatever is the appropriate thing, then the sexual interaction is for production of children. And if that's how it's used, that's called brahmachari. So one is a grihasta brahmachari. Does that make sense? So if one's gay, one can't have children, therefore one doesn't use that aspect. So they're considered brahmachari. but the whole point is why would they be together? You know what I'm saying? So why get into those details? You apply it. The point is if they're able to follow, then it doesn't matter what the background was. Because the point is all, you know, it's just like, okay, he moved in the temple, okay, he was smoking pot. Okay? But this guy over here, he was mainlining heroin. You know, does he get to come into the temple? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. And then that guy over there was making the heroin that this guy was, you know, like that. That this guy was selling, that this guy was using. So get in, you know, and that guy over there was growing the poppy plants. You know what I mean? How far do you take it? You understand? So the point is if the soul sees that this is not good and is moving on, then you take it from that platform. If they're saying, no, it's okay, what's the problem? You know, you got a problem with it? Then yes, it does affect their position. Then they can't carry on in that position. You know what I'm saying? But if they see it's a problem, it's there, then it's like what he said, then they come back. They're situated nicely in devotional service, though they have that impurity in the heart. But all it is that it's become obvious that they have it. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the thing, is everyone has to identify what are the weaknesses in the heart and then try to get rid of them. But it comes down to, ultimately, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So giving up, I'm the controller and enjoyer, that's how you get rid of all these. Because otherwise, it's very difficult to just get rid of the one thing.
Yeah.
You know, and so, in other words, giving up a particular preparation may be very difficult. Right? But giving up, but only eating what's offered to Krishna, then that becomes easier. You know what I'm saying? It's not offered to Krishna, you don't eat it. So the thing that you want to eat is not offerable to Krishna, so therefore you don't eat it. It's so much easier. So that's the point, is devotional service. Then, because it's based on that connection to Krishna, that relationship, that's the dynamic principle. And the moral aspects, those are glories. So yes, that person is having problems and this and that, and that's there, and it's understood. So you try to how you say, when on the Sunday program, you have him talk to the ladies. Don't talk to the cool dudes that just came from the gym, you know, in the singlets. Yeah, just, no, he doesn't go over that side of the room. He goes this side over here, you know? You know? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? But have him talk to the smart ladies, not to the bimbos, because, yeah. Okay? Yeah. So, like that. And so then it works. You know the weakness is there. And then let's say you have another brahmachari who they don't have any problem. They haven't had any problems. So that's an ornament on their devotion. Well, the other one, it's not that it's a stain on their devotion. It's just they're from the material. What do you want? Right? It's like you have potatoes in any state they're in, and then you have clean potatoes. So don't say that dirty potatoes can't become clean. You know? And if they're clean and you drop them on the floor, then you give them a wash. Then he goes back to, you know how you say? 3-second rule? Right? It follows 3 seconds? 5 seconds?
Everybody.
3 seconds. Okay. Yeah, 3 seconds is a long time. Does that make sense? So then you try to see what's the principle there and apply that. So that's what we're talking about, is that the devotion is the prominent, then you judge, you calculate the secondary according to its connection with the devotion. So that connection to devotion is strong, then these things are a problem and you have to make the situation that is there. So now if the temple is only brahmacharis, and that maybe they all will do better outside. But if the temple has so many arrangements and that has other things, then you engage them in a place where it's not going to be a problem. You know what I'm saying? Because the whole point is everybody's got a background. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that you're trying to create as much good association, that taste in Krishna consciousness, you know, that being all those things, so that someone will be nicely situated. Then being nicely situated, it doesn't matter their background. The guy just, you know, he came to the Sunday program, he thought about it, comes to another couple, then he moves into the temple. We're not going, hey, 3 weeks ago the guy was, you know, eating meat. You know, we don't do that. We go, he's a devotee. You know, sometimes people use the weak argument, well, that was before he became, but now that he's a devotee and he does that. But then we're saying that karma has more potency than bhakti. Because you'll hear that. Oh, he fell down. They went away. Yeah, but they went away and did nonsense. But he did it as a devotee. But the point is this, once you take it up, when's the difference? And for the soul, where's the difference? You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is you have to see each thing individually and then make a, you know, this definition. But the point is we have to remember Krishna's the one who said they're rightly situated. Like that, because everybody's doing something wrong on some level. And so simply to find those faults, that's not a glory in devotional service, right? To be able to help someone get through those, or to engage them in positive activities that they become distracted from, you know, how you say, distracted from the distraction, so they're always absorbed in Krishna, then that's very good. And if something's in the way, you can point out how it's getting in the way of devotional service. Otherwise, to just say he's gay, how is that a problem? What's the problem with gays? You had a problem with gays? In other words, that's the whole point of this. It cuts all ways. You know, you can use it like that. So the whole point is that it's a matter of, What is the whole point there? It's because what's the thing? The principle of, you could say, grihastha life is based on these higher principles, but it may be expressed through the bodily position, right? Because you have some eternal principles that you're working with. The gay aspect, the weakness is there, is that the focus is so much on the external that it greatly reduces one's appreciation of the subtleties. Right? So if the background is there of being gay, that doesn't matter as long as one can shift from that external to the devotional activities. But if one is active in that way, the externals become so important, more than in men and women. You know what I'm saying? Because women want the men to dress nicely. But if they don't, it still works. You know, they may be a bozo, but still, you know, they're part of the scene. Right? But generally when you get into the gay kind of scene, no, it make it or break it on how well they're dressed. And if you can't immediately adjust that, it's irreconcilable. You understand? Because the external has become so overemphasized. That's the weakness in it. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it's avoided. So we're not looking at it from the moralistic point of view. We're looking at it from the point of view of how does it support, how does it create renunciation? You know what I'm saying? Because in grihastha life, the man and woman, there's a regulation. That regulation will slowly start to create renunciation. Where's that regulation in the game? You understand? It's just based on sense gratification. It may have some emotional attachment to it, but the emphasis is on the external. So that's why it's a weak position. You understand? That's the problem in devotional service, not the moralistic aspect. So that's why we don't worry what the background someone has. It's how well they can function within Krishna consciousness. That's why Krishna consciousness is universal. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. So if one can make that distinction, then you can talk and just appreciate what Krishna is talking here. You know, because a lot of this is, you know, 11th canto and stuff like that, 12th canto. So it's very much on that aspect of renunciation, seeing from this vision. Earlier than that, it's talking about engaging, but at the point we're at now, we're talking on that level. So does that make sense? So it's slightly different. Okay? Is that good? We're good? So it was okay. We just said gay and didn't say LBGTQ. We're okay.
You didn't say pumpkin either.
Huh?
Pumpkin. You can be pumpkin.
Oh yeah, I didn't say pumpkin. Yes, yeah, sorry. See, somebody gets left out, right? You know. Yes. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai
Nitai Gaura Vrinda.